The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
You're a cute pussycat. Yes, you like that, huh?
These cats run on batteries. It feels like a stretch to call such a simple mechanical stuffed animal a robot, but that's what they are. A basic robotic toy designed to fill the laps of older adults.
She's my friend's cat, but I watch her a lot of times. And she's just wonderful. She likes to play and have fun. We have a lot of fun together. We really do. So it's nice.
Robotic toys are everywhere now, including this nursing home, where staff use these cats to reduce stress and sometimes the need for medication.
She's just beautiful to me. She's my best friend. She's everything.
On today's show, robotic companions.
This is the future of everything. A look ahead from the Wall Street Journal.
From the newsroom in New York, I'm Jennifer Strong, and this is the future of everything. We begin at a nursing home in the Bronx.
How are you, Jennifer?
Hi.
I'm Mary. Nice to meet you. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
My name is Mary Farkas. I'm the director of therapeutic activities at the Hebrew Home at Riverdale.
This isn't your average nursing facility. With 900 residents, a warm water pool, and sweeping views of the Hudson River, it feels more like a college campus, but one with a Andy Warhol collection.
Makes me laugh every day.
Something it shares in common with nursing homes all over the country are these robotic cats.
We call them sensory cats. They're therapeutic robotic cats that serve as a way to really help people feel good. They are reminded of their ability to take care of something in a community where they often have to be cared for. They get to be the caregiver again, and that's very beautiful to watch.
They're marketed as companions for older adults by toy maker Hasbro at a cost of about $100. Other robotic animals are more realistic, but Farkas says the cats are affordable and easy to relate to.
We have a robust pet therapy program. Dogs, fish, birds. But the great thing about these cats is they're available 24 hours a day. They're available late in the evening when my golden retriever has gone home. These cats are available. And later in the day is often a time of distress for people living with Alzheimer's disease or other dementias. So this is a really great tool to have available all the time.
She says the robotic cats have reduced the need for antipsychotic medication in some residents.
I have personally used this intervention with a resident who was sundowning, so she was confused later in the day, feeling distressed about wanting to go home to see her parents. And I was able to redirect her to come and sit with me with the cat and pet the cat and groom the cat, and she was able to calm down.
Just outside Boston, I check out a completely different kind of robot companion. One able to follow behind you for several miles on city sidewalks, carrying up to 40 pounds of your stuff.
I'm Jeffrey Schnapp. I'm the CEO of Piaggio Fast Forward and a professor at Harvard.
He's also the founder of Harvard's Meta Lab.
So Jita is a robotic vehicle that is about not quite waist high.
Parent company Piaggio is best known for its Vespa scooters. Jita fits right in from a color and design perspective.
It's almost spherical, like a squash sphere, with a cargo bay in the middle that holds up to 40 pounds, about the size of a case of wine or a case of bottles of mineral water. And it has two large bicycle-sized wheels, and it self-balances as it moves around. It's an electric-powered vehicle, and it has a little kind of Angry Bird beak on the front and a whole series of sensor packages that allow it to interact, constantly scan the environment that it's traveling in, follow its human leader, or operate autonomously using its knowledge of the world.
Sidewalks are trickier than we might think, full of obstacles like trash cans and fire hydrants, and not well mapped either. Each time Jita makes a trip, it's making notes for future trips.
To operate Jita is incredibly simple. We've designed them to require no user manual. If you know how to walk, you know how to drive a Jita. And it has a zero turning radius. It can just spin on its own axis. So anything you can do as a pedestrian, move to the left, to the right, dance around, skip, hop, and jump, Jita will follow you. To link up to it, to sync, you just hit the interface, and it will do a little sort of adaptive dance.
Jita is expected to hit the market late next year. The audience includes urbanites and the elderly.
If I'm going to operate Jita, this is my personal Jita. I'd open the cargo bin, you know, put my stuff in there, my running gear and so forth. Close the lid, just set myself up in front of it, and it syncs. Now it's synced to my feet. Right, wherever I go, eating.
There's a thumbprint lock for when you park it, and Schnapp says there's no need for a bike lock.
It weighs enough that it's unlikely that somebody would be able to cart off your Jita. We feel pretty confident about that. So if I want to pick it back up again, once I'm synced, it'll do that little dance that it does when it knows, and that's it. You're off again. You're not looking at a little screen. Your hands are free. All you have to do is walk. It's not really like a pet, because most pets aren't quite so well behaved.
Up until now, Americans have used personal robots for tasks. Vacuuming, lawn mowing. Next year, a personal chef capable of making over 2,000 recipes is due out from Moli Robotics. But don't expect it to be much faster than a human. It's not the robot's fault. We humans just aren't comfortable with knives moving at superhuman speed. So what about a robot that knows you're in the room and can also recognize the faces of your children?
I'm Cynthia Brazil. I'm an associate professor at the MIT Media Lab, where I direct the Personal Robots Group, and I'm also a co-founder and chief scientist of Jibo.
Brazil is a pioneer in social robots.
It is the type of robot that really brings together not only the usefulness and the functionality, but also the ability to interact with people in a way that feels much more like a companion, much more like interacting with another as a partner versus interacting with the technology as a tool.
While others might look at social robots as a luxury good, Brazil sees them as a necessity.
I see tremendous applications of this work to help to address, I would say, many known societal challenges, such as helping people to age in place, the ability to provide high-quality, personalized education to children at home, starting with early childhood learning, right? Potentially workforce retraining, health and wellness, all of these areas. So I see it eventually as becoming something that will be indispensable because it will be providing services that are deeply meaningful and important when you think about what families are really trying to do. We want our children to be educated. We want us to be competitive in the workforce. We want to be able to age with independence. We want to be healthier. These things are profoundly important. And we know that the gap between professionals, human professionals, and the growing demand in all of these areas is getting worse and worse and worse and worse. So technology is going to have to come somehow step in, and I would say in the right way, in a much more humanistic way.
Her answer to that is called Jibo.
Hey, my name's Jibo. They say I am a robot. But between you and me, I've always felt more like a Sagittarius.
So Jibo is the world's first social robot for the home. He's also a platform, which means it's kind of like if personal robots met like the smartphone ecosystem. I think we all are resonating now with the face in the screen phenomenon, you know, and my kids now are 9 through 13, and it's like screen time, their tablets are up, you know, faces, you know, doses, you know, digital cocoon, you know, deployed, and they walk off, and I'm like, I'm still talking to you, sweetheart. You know, I think one of the great things about social robots is because it's physically co-present, you can interact and get the benefit of interacting with technology, but it actually supports a face-to-face dynamic. And it's inclusive as a group. So I can talk to my son, I can turn to talk to Jibo, he can talk to Jibo, and we all feel included, and it's all about making eye contact. It's all about kind of, you know, doing this human-human relationship thing.
Jibo can do things like recognize who's home, keep an elderly relative company, or your diet and fitness goals on track.
We are such, as human beings, such profoundly social and emotional beings, right? And so much of AI to date has viewed us mostly as cognitive beings, where it's all about the task. But what we're finding is you can design technologies that can really support a more holistic human experience.
But with these complex social interactions comes a tremendous amount of very personal information, and they're not quite ready to talk about how they plan to protect that data. Something else folks are watching for, a release date. Jibo's launch was originally set for 2015.
We don't just want it to be like exactly like what you would get on an Android device. I mean, you could do that, right? You could just put a straight Android app on the touchscreen, but why? You know, you really want to make each one of these touch points differentiated and special so people understand what is so different about a social robot and why do I want it in my life? I think that's getting that right. It just takes time.
One thing we do know, humans attach human characteristics to objects already. We do it with baby blankets and all sorts of other things that can't even talk back, so we probably shouldn't be shocked that people already talk to Amazon's Alexa or Apple's Siri like a human. We even open up about things like depression, which begs the question,
what do we want robots to do for us?
That's Harvard's and Piaggio Fast Forward's Jeffrey Schnapp.
How do we want robots to expand, augment, improve the quality of life? How do we want them to serve us, not to serve themselves or simply to serve corporate interests? And the beginnings of that conversation, that debate, that series of policy issues, we can already feel their presence in the sorts of discussions around autonomous vehicles that have begun over the past 4 to 5 years.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. John Wardock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. We had help with this episode from The Wall Street Journal's Christopher Mims, Joanna Stern, Tanya Bustos, and Charlie Turner. If you like what you hear, make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong from The Newsroom in New York.
News on the go. Whenever you want it, wherever you want it. The Wall Street Journal. Listen ambitiously.
This episode is brought to you by Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day. But what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how they may affect your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/WashingtonWise.